ഛത്രിച്ഛാദ്വിജാഗ്രേമം ശ്രദ്ധയോ ഭരിതം മയാ സർവാത്മനാനുരൂപം തേ ഗൃഹമേരിഷു കർമ്മസു ഛത്രിച്ഛാദ്വിജാഗ്രേമം ശ്രദ്ധയോ ഭവിതം മയാ സർവാത്മനാനുരൂപം തേ ഗൃഹമേരിഷു കർമ്മസു ഛത്രിച്ഛാദ്വിജാഗ്രേമം ശ്രദ്ധയോ ഭവിതം മയാ സർവാത്മനാനുരൂപം തേ ഗൃഹമേരിഷു കർമ്മസു. Translation. Therefore, please accept her, O chief of the Brahmanas, for I offer her with faith, and she is in every respect fit to be your wife, and take charge of your household duties. Purport. The words grihamedishu karmashu mean in household duties. Another word is also used here, sarvatmananurupam. The purport is that a wife should not only be an equal to her husband in age, character, and qualities, but must be helpful to him in his household duties. The household duty of a man is not to satisfy his sense gratification, but to remain with a wife and children, and at the same time attain advancement in spiritual life. One who does not do so is not a householder, but a grihamedi. The two words are used in Sanskrit literature. One is grihasta, and the other is grihamedi. The difference between grihasta and grihamedi is that a grihasta is also an ashram, or spiritual order. But if one simply satisfies his senses as a householder, then he is a grihamedi. For a grihamedi, to accept a wife means to satisfy his senses. But for a grihasta, a qualified wife is an assistant in every respect for advancement in spiritual activities. It is the duty of the wife to take charge of household affairs, and not to compete with the husband. The wife is meant to help, but she cannot help her husband unless he is completely equal to her in age, character, and qualities. So here we are seeing the proper acceptance of the grihasta ashram by an upakurvana brahmachari. There are two kinds of brahmacharis, naishtika and upakurvana. They both have the same training, and they both have the same understanding, but there's a difference in realization. They both have the same understanding of the material world, of grihasta life, but by realization, the naistika does not need the emotional support. Therefore, grihasta life is not necessary. While the upakurvana feels the need for that support, so then the grihasta life is ideal then for that situation. So here we see that that the sage is very qualified, and he is in control of his senses. He's focused on the Supreme Lord. He's been trained very nicely. So then, and so then the Manu then considers him to be a fit candidate as a good husband, you know, for his daughter. And his daughter, hearing his qualities, then she fixed her mind upon him, because there's the need of equality. This equality is spoken about in the Vedas as the most important element in marriage. That if that is there, then they will be able to peacefully cooperate together. And at the same time, then the children will also be very ideal. Because if there's equality, then the mentality being the same, then that means then there'll be one mentality in the child. Otherwise, if the parents have different, completely different mentalities, the child will also have two mentalities. Then we end up with the difficulties of the modern age, where they can't figure out who they are. You see, so many times the youth can't figure what I should do, where I should go, what I should be, anything. Or we see those when they come from families where there's the compatibility between the parents. Then the children are focused. They know what they want to do. Generally, it'll be similar to what the parents are doing. And from a young age, then they can be encouraged in that direction because it means something to them, like that. You generally see those who are ahead in the, their performance of their occupational duties. Generally, is because from a young age they understood what they were to do, and they had the determination to do it, and they had the encouragement and support from their parents and others to do those things. So then it makes for everything working very nicely. Because the most important is not just the ability. Ability is one thing. There's so many people that have great ability to do so many things. They can't do them, don't like to do them. More important is the mentality to be able to do them. If that is imbibed, then you can do it. It means you'll figure it out. If someone, let's say, has the mentality of a businessman, even if he doesn't know all the little techniques, he'll figure it out. Because he knows what he's trying to get to. So he'll try this, he'll try that, and he'll figure out what works, what doesn't work. Of course, if he's trained, it'll go much quicker. But more important is someone may be trained in business, but if they don't have the business mentality, they won't be able to do business. So this is the thing. So training is not just everything. Like we see in the education, Vedic educational system, that the Brahmins, Kshatriyas, and the Vaishyas would all be trained in the same knowledge. They'd all have the same knowledge. So all the different aspects of the culture, they would all know. But you would see the Brahmins know it as knowledge, but they don't perform. They don't perform the Kshatriya activities, the Vaishya activities. So they know it, but they don't have the mentality to do it. While the Kshatriyas and Vaishyas, they know those things, and they have the mentality to do it. So they can put the two together. And then they can do. So we see its mentality is more important than having the basic technical knowledge of it. So then, as if the mentality is there, one can gain that knowledge. If the mentality is not there, even if you give the knowledge, then they won't be able to appreciate it like that. You know, someone who has a nature, then they appreciate. So. So there must be this equalness in their qualities and their character. Equal means compatible. It doesn't mean they'll be the same. Like you could say a bowl and a spoon are equal. You know, if you have a little dessert spoon, you know, it will go with a little plate. Right? But if you have a soup spoon, it will go with a big bowl. So, but the two go together. This is the one has to understand what equal is. It's not that they have to be the same height, or you know, you have to measure their nose if it's the same, or you know, like that. That's just not. It's same means they are matching qualities. They go together. The two go together. So then, you know, it's just like bread and butter. They're not matching. But on their own, they're not so wonderful. You put them together, they're nice. And they're very, you mean, seemingly different, but they have the same. So here, the same qualities, as mentioned here. Character, so they both have the same level of character, that they're both fixed in their religious duties, in their proper understanding. Learning, they both have the same areas of knowledge, so then they'll be able to converse in that on some common platform. So when the husband refers to some Dharma Shastra or some other aspect of the Vedic literature, the wife will also understand the meanings there. That beauty, beautiful appearance, that they both must have similar features and qualities, you know, then they will be, you know, because one naturally, unfortunately, but one naturally thinks one's own features are very attractive. So if someone has something that matches, one is very pleased. One feels that they are also attractive. Youth, so then they should have the same vigor and enthusiasm, and other virtues, whatever is the other, you know, finer qualities. In this youth, we find. But this has to be compatible youth. We find the youth of girls, then when they reach puberty, they go from girls to women. While boys, they go from boys to punks to men. So women and men go together. Women and punks don't go together. Therefore, there is the need for the boy to be trained further in his life before he's ready for marriage. So that's why equalness in age doesn't mean the same age by years of the body. It means same age by years of the subtle body. So women at 12 start thinking about the house and this and how they'd like to live and that. Boys don't, you know. Girls, when they associate with boys, think about marriage, children. Boys think about having fun. So it's not until they get older then the boys understand the need of their responsibilities and the maturity in that. So therefore, then they can be matched with a suitable girl. So here, when it's saying age, it's not meaning just the body. We take age as just the body, but we also mean what is the material maturity like that. Another term here is grihasta and grihamedi. Because in the verse it's grihamedishu, but it's not with a long I. What the grihamedi is. So here then, the grihamedi means that the house is the center of activities. A medi means a stick. And that you put into the courtyard that then you will use for putting the bullocks around to, you know, thrash different things or do different kinds of work, grind oil or, how you say, crush grains or different things that will be done by this process. So the bullocks, then they walk all day and they feel that they've gone a great distance. But they haven't gone anywhere, right? And so this is the grihamedi. He feels he's made great strides in his life, but actually he hasn't gotten anywhere. You know, they just go around and around because the house is the center. But a grihasta means then it's an ashram. So the ashram means then you put God in the center. So same principle, but the difference is what do you put? If you put the house in the center, and then your life revolves around that, or you put God in the center, and then you and your house revolve around that. That's basically the difference. It's like the difference between the, what do you call it, whether the earth is the center of the universe or the earth. The movements of the planets are exactly the same. It means if it all moves, then, and you put a pin into the sun, you know, then everything, all the planets move in the same way, but they move around the sun. But if you pull that out and put it into the earth, then the sun goes around the earth and all the planets go around the sun. So you end up with the same exact mathematical calculations of movements of the planets. It's just which is the center. So that's the thing. Is Krishna the center or is the house the center? So the grihasta ashram being the Lord being the center, then it says here, grihamedishu karamasu means mean in household duties. So that means there's duties to perform. That's the meaning of grihasta life. It means living with a woman doesn't mean it's a grihasta life. Living with a woman and performing duties, that is grihasta life. Then these duties are how to excel in spiritual life, how to engage one's nature in Krishna consciousness. The whole process of duties that is given in the Varnashram system is simply to create the relationships between ourselves and other entities within this world. It's actually there for the whole cosmic creation. But it is specifically, you know, meaningful to us in this relationship is that you have to know what is an element and what is its relationship with something else. This is religion. This is the definition that we see acharyas give. Generally, we think religion is a body of rules and regulations that, you know, somehow or another control our life so that we may live in a more, you know, pious and moral way. So that is one aspect of them, but it's not actually the complete definition. A proper definition is what is the inherent nature of something you can't change. That is religion. So that means, like in a dog, its religion is to bark, to wag its tail, you know, to water vertical items sticking out of the ground, you know, like this. This is the religion of a dog. You cannot change it. You know, cats, they catch mice, climb trees, purr, like this. These are things that, this is religion. So it's a much broader definition than we're used to. So this means that, we need to understand who we are, and then what is everything else in this world that we're going to have to deal with in our life. Then, once we understand those two things, then the next step is what is the relationship between us and that thing, that other entity, you know, whether it be living or not living, what is our relationship with it? Then, now we're talking that the application of religion. First is religions, you have to know what it is. The second is to apply the relationship. And the third is what you can get from that relationship. So these three things have to be there. Who we are, who the other person is, what's the relationship. What you can get from the relationship, and how to proceed in that relationship. You know these three things, that's religion. If you don't know these things, it's not religion. Right? Maybe by chance we might do something religious. But it's not systematic. By chance, you know, by practice, we've heard a few things, but we don't really know, we don't really understand. So then, the Varnashram system means that what is your nature? That's where it starts. Okay, one is a student. Therefore, one's the nature of a student is he must study. Right? The religion of a student is study. Now to study, then there's very things that are necessary. One's brains must be intact. So that means they can't be distracted. And they must be nourished. So that means then one has to have a lifestyle that does that. It means you can't be involved in things that are going to distract the attention. And you have to be living a diet, a lifestyle that is favorable for that. So then they, you know, they won't sleep in the day, they won't sleep through the sandhyas because these increase lust, they increase distractions, certain restrictions in what they eat, so that they won't increase any disturbance or anxiety. And this way then they can focus. Then if they want to learn, you can learn as long as you are humble. This is when you become proud, that area then becomes closed for you. What areas you have some reverence for, you can learn more of. So this is important. Because as soon as you think, I know, then nothing more goes in. Other people may say, you may read, but you know already. So you may gain a little bit. So depending on how great is that pride, then there's more or less. But if you're not, you revere the subject matter, you revere those who can teach you that subject matter, then it goes in. So then to create that, then they have a lifestyle that matches. They must do menial service, they beg, they do all these things that maintain, nourish that nature. So then they get what they need, and they advance. So that's as big as their sphere, so therefore that's as big as their lifestyle. Grihastha life then includes so much more, and so much more needs and emotions and activities. Therefore, the knowledge must be greater, and the application must be broader. So one must know more things. One has to know what is, the brahmachari now has to know what is a woman, how to deal with that, what this means, what is a home, how to deal with those things, what is money, how to deal with those things. So he has to know the nature of it. If he knows less than the nature, he won't be successful. He has to know the nature. Otherwise, he won't function. That's the religion. You must know the religion of the money. You must know the religion of a woman, religion of a child, religion of a house, religion of whatever he has in his sphere. What is his particular occupation to maintain that? He must know that. Otherwise, he'll be unsuccessful. So we see is then it expands. So then there is more. You have to be able to explain or engage everything. means the whole idea is the devotee can engage everything in Krishna's service. So he must know the nature of everything, the nature of cleanliness. So he must know, what is the nature of my hand after I've eaten? You know, you have to know the nature of how to maintain that cleanliness, how you can correct this unclean situation by water, how to use that water. You know, what parts of the body have to be washed with that water after you've eaten? What is the nature of all these things? What is the nature of a serving utensil, of a spoon, of a plate, of the person who's eating? Right? If it's a small child, then you're going to serve them different than an adult. Right? You know, then, so you have to know these things, otherwise one's not successful. So this is what the Varnashram system is for. So we see, depending upon the sphere, it's bigger or smaller. Therefore, the Brahmachari, the Vanaprastha, the Sannyas ashrams, their sphere is smaller. So the amount of rules and technical aspects are less. The Grihastha covers the biggest, broadest area. So it has the more. They have more possessions, more family members, more relatives, more interactions, more need of dealing in so many ways with money, so many things. So therefore, there's more rules. So all these are there so that there'll be success in the dealings. So then it becomes griha medishu karmashu. Then it becomes the household duties. So that is the point, is the man, upon getting married, has all these responsibilities, and the wife assists in these responsibilities. So then they work together to perfect the grihastha ashram. So that is just the religion on its own. But we see from Bhagavatam that unless the religion is meant to attain to the lotus feet of Krishna, then it's not perfect. You know, it may be materially perfect, but it's not actually perfection of human life, because human life is not meant to just be here in the material world. It's meant to get out of the material world. Therefore, all these things, then you have to take it to the next step. Is what is its connection to Krishna? So who am I? Who is this other person or entity? What is our relationship? What are the activities and goals of that? And how that's connected to Krishna? So then this is the next step. So one has to be able to connect all that to Krishna. Then it becomes the proper grihastha ashram. Then it becomes the daiva varna ashram, where Krishna then becomes actually directly the center. Because we can deal with this directly and indirectly also. Is indirectly, we are doing it according to the Varnashram system for our needs. Once we get those needs, then we take those needs and engage them in the Lord's service. This is the first stage. The next stage is that these duties and everything are Krishna's. I am Krishna's, my family is Krishna's, everything is Krishna's. Therefore, I am doing Krishna's work, and the result that comes is already Krishna's. I don't have to give it to him because it is his. Right? You see the difference here? The one is, we are taking it, this is my work, my house, my wife, my kids, my dog, my parakeet, everything. And then I will do with them what I want to get. Then that result I'll give to Krishna. Right? The other is that all these belong to Krishna, and I will do with them how Krishna wants it to be done, for his satisfaction. The first one I'm doing, here's the rules God gave me for dealing with these things, so I can get what I want. The other is this is, because they belong to God, this is the way he wants it dealt with. It's the same rule, it doesn't change, it's just the mentality of ours. Of who's in control, us or God, like that. So this is the difference then between the platform of performing things for our own desire and the platform of performing those without our own desire. Though, because we understand the nature, we understand that these needs are required. So then you work in that field. One is comfortable in that field. One finds he'll be comfortable serving Krishna in the field of the grihastha or in the brahmachari or sannyas or, you know, whatever it is. He feels comfortable because he has a conditioned nature that is suitable for that situation. and he is at that particular stage in his development to match that. And so putting all that together, then one is able to situate oneself properly. Yeah. Any questions on this? Yes.
What are some of the indicators whether one should be Grihastha or Brahmacharya?
Indicator. When one hears about the nature of women associating with women and the household duties, and one, you know, gets familiar with the details of it, if he feels comfortable with it, then generally marriage would probably be, he would feel satisfied with. That would be one. If by hearing all those things, he understands it and he doesn't see the need to get involved in it, then that's generally would be someone who doesn't need to get married. Like that. That would be a major indicator. If one needs more, detail on that, one has to see is that does one need the emotional support that Grihastha life can give, or one feels emotionally supported without it, like that. Because the whole point of relationships means that your central feature is the mind. The mind is the place where that experiences the relationships, like that. So if the mind finds a satisfaction in the sphere that one's in the Brahmacharya ashram, then it doesn't need to find that support, that emotional support in the Grihastha ashram. But if it finds that the mind feels that need, then Grihastha ashram is the ideal place to engage those needs. Like that. So that's what you look for. Just looking for as lust won't work, because that's grihamedi. Because the problem with that is a woman's more than, you know, a body. And so if it lust, then it's only dealing with that aspect. Then there's a weakness, because then addressing the needs of the actual personality of the woman won't be had. And then the children, you can't have lust towards them, so they're just a byproduct, so then you really don't know how to deal with them either. Attachment will be there. You know, anything you have, you're attached to, but some people take care of what they have nicely and some people don't. So there are different things, and he looks around for a suitable female dog of, you know, proper age and lineage and that. No, it's not like that. Like that. So lust is enough for producing animals, but it's not enough for producing humans. Like that. Or let's say potential humans. Because all humans are born animals. And then they're trained. Means an animal is just born. But a human has to be trained. Like that. Humans without training don't become humans. They remain animals. That's the interesting thing. Because the human life is something different. One may inquire why, because only in human life are you given independence, freedom to make a choice. The animals will act exactly according to the laws of nature, like that. What is their exact karma that they're supposed to go through? That's all they'll go through, and they don't have a choice in the matter, because the modes of nature will just take them through. And we've heard of this thing called instinct. They'll just act accordingly. You know, they can't. The dog can't decide that it's going to take up a different lifestyle, a different occupation. No, it'll its whole life remain in the dog occupation. But a human being can choose any of 8,400,000 species. That's his freedom. Therefore, to choose human means one has to be trained in it, because it doesn't come naturally. It comes by training. That the human child then has the potential to become human, but unless they're trained, they actually don't become like that. That is the unique thing about the humans. So they're all born animals, but the one will, you know, remain more in that way and be satisfied, while the other one will want to be progressive and learn actually higher values of life. Is that okay?
Also, another question related to the original question, is there a connection between the varna and the ashram?
Is there a connection between the varna and the ashram?
Yeah.
There would be means because the brahminical varna functions in goodness. While the Kshatriya Vaishya Shudra, then there'll be touches of passion, ignorance. So then generally those two are more comfortable in the Grihastha ashram. When those two are mixed, then that Grihastha, that is there. So even if someone is brahminical, if there's more passion and ignorance, then it will also be a desirable position like that. So basically that means unless they're a life of simplicity, austerity, and all that, then they'll feel comfortable. Basically, so that means practically everybody will feel more comfortable in the Grihastha ashram, like that. Because you see very few, even in the Bhagavatam, sages who were just completely detached and renounced and were completely satisfied there. They didn't need anything more than that. You know, we see Atri, Kardama, he's very qualified. But still, there's that need. The emotional needs are there, like that. So, but they don't have, the Brahmins have less physical requirements. For them, Brahmins, between them and their family, it's basically just on the emotional platform, on the mental platform. Physical contact and interaction is not needed to a great deal at all. And just the touch to support those moods. But as we find, as we go down in the varnas, that it's more, generally more manifest, like that. Like that. The things required, the activities, the broadness of the sphere, and all that, then it broadens. Like that, especially in passion. Goodness, I mean, ignorance, it pulls back in a bit again. Because in ignorance, one's not aware of as many things. But what one is aware of, one needs to deal with very intimately. Like that. Passion, you can balance it. So they deal with more things, less attached. And then the mode of goodness then creates simplicity. So then again, they deal with less things, but in a less detached way. So that makes some sense.
I missed the last sentence.
Less things in a more detached way, like that, right? So they're aware of more things, but they're aware that they don't need them. So they choose, I only need these few things for my, you know, service and situation. But they will deal with them properly, but from a platform of detachment, like that. It's their duty to deal with them. Mode of passion, they want to deal with all those things, and they have more desires, so they deal with a much broader range, but they can follow duty, because the false ego is less. So then they are able to deal with all those things according to the proper religious principles. But they are comfortable dealing in a very broad area of things. Mode of ignorance, then one's perception is reduced. And so one is not seeing so broadly like the other two modes, you know, one out of knowledge and one out of desire. But what one focuses on, then one is very, close to, you know, the dealings are very close. One may or may not act out of religious duty with those things, because attachment, if it's too strong, it makes it hard to follow religious duties. Like that, because one doesn't have the attachment, tends to create, you know, impatience, and the perception of time becomes changed. So therefore, long vision, long view is not very much, you know. It's like this, it's not that's the problem. Ignorance, there's an interesting story on just the shortness of vision of someone in the mode of ignorance. That we were told this story in Mauritius by some Mauritius businessmen. They were complaining about the natural kind of like petty political atmosphere that is there in the place. And then they told this joke that France was putting out a tender for frogs. Who could give the best rates on frogs? So then, you know, different countries put up their attenders, I think India and Bangladesh and other places like this, and also Mauritius put it up. And then when the French looked at the tenders, they saw that the Mauritian offer was much less than anybody else's. So then they thought, well, this is good. So then they called the Mauritians in and said, you get the contract, but we're impressed. How is it that you can, make, because this was a long project, it wasn't a small project, how can you have such a less price than everybody else? And the Mauritian businessman said, no problem, it's very easy, because we're giving you Mauritian frogs, like that. He said, so we don't need to put a lid on the boxes, like that. Everybody else has to use lids to keep the frogs in the boxes. We don't. We can without. And he says, how is that? He says, because the Mauritian frogs, they have a unique character, that if one frog tries to jump out, all the others pull them back inside. Like that. So this is the result of ignorance. When ignorance increases, actually things become decreased, like that. Like we see in the pure state, the soul has a full manifestation of a spiritual form. But in his state of ignorance, it becomes reduced down to 1/10,000th of the tip of a hair. So like that, ignorance reduces, but it intensifies in its own way. Does that make some sense? Yeah.
No, I should be talking about changing ashrams and determining change of ashram. You discussed emotional needs. What is some determining indication, like apart from age, changing back into, if one goes to vanaprastha ashram, are those emotional needs fulfilled, or is it there frustrated, or how does one change the disposition so that the emotional needs go towards Krishna rather than another jiva?
It's both. Because if one follows Varnashram, one can satisfy the desires. Without following it, one cannot satisfy one's desires. It's impossible, because it's the way the material world works. One may have approached it not through Varnashram, maybe through some other religious process or by experience, your family members and others have told you this is how you should deal and you'll get a better result. But you'll generally find all those eventually go back to some religious process. You know, a good moral upstanding person, generally you find there's some kind of religious background, and so there's some tradition coming there. So without religion, you can't actually satisfy the mind. Because the mind can't be satisfied on its own. Only by restriction and focusing, then it can be satisfied. It's just like we see when the mind is totally unrestricted, we call that state insanity. And we're bothered by the person that's insane, but more, the person who's insane is the most disturbed. They're the one that goes, they go crazy because their mind is so restless and wants so many things and they can't get and all that, therefore it's so uncontrolled, they go crazy. So therefore sanity means controlling the mind and focusing it. So religion knows how to do that. Nowadays people speculate, oh, we'll do this to control or that, but they don't actually address the needs. So then it doesn't create still a proper social structure. Even though they try and they make more and more rules, there's less and less social sanity. Though there's more rules from the government. Before there were less rules from the government. They all came from religion. And then things were more peaceful. They just say, someone's a God-fearing, upstanding gentleman, then he could be, we'll accept them in our club or accept them in this position. That was all they had to say. And everybody knew what that meant. Because there's so many rules on that in religion, what that means. But nowadays, now you have to have all those rules put into the bylaws of that position or that activity, and still it doesn't work like that. So religion is the only way to actually satisfy the mind. But the problem is the mind, being a material element, can't really be satisfied. Or even if it's satisfied, we, the soul, won't be satisfied. So it's a combination of satisfaction and frustration. Right? It's not one or the other. It's both. That you're satisfied that what you needed you got. But you're also, you know, understand that it's not actually going to make me happy. I got it, but it doesn't actually make me happy what I thought it was. So we put our faith in our emotions, material emotions. And we have an idea of where we're going to get those emotions from. And so when we get them, then we're satisfied because that's where we thought, you know, happiness in the material world is fulfillment of the mind's desire. You know, whether it's good or not, if the mind is satisfied, then one's happy. But one also sees that it still it didn't make me satisfied. And the mind also can only be so satisfied before it wants to move on. That's why there's need of unlimited, situations in this world to keep everybody's mind busy. Otherwise it gets bored. So that aspect is going to be there on that platform. The other is then, it's more is that aspect is there, but more important is realization. Because if realization is there, not there, then even though one is satisfied or is frustrated, one can't move on. Because one doesn't know what's the alternative. Right? See, just like in the Western culture, means they have this phenomena of the night before the wedding, then there'll be all the boys will get together, you know, the groom and his friends, and they have a stag party. It's this last night of freedom, right? As everybody knows, in marriage, then you're not free, and, you know, things are completely different. And they talk about their freedom and how nice it is, but they don't have an alternative. Because they don't know how to stay out of marriage or don't know how to run marriage in a proper way. So even though they know, there's nothing they can do about it. So realization then becomes important. One must realize that this is not actually what you're really looking for as the soul. The conditioned nature is satisfied. But the spiritual nature is not. And then you actually have to look at what's the real nature of the relationships in the family. The ones that last were the cooperations of devotees. Right? So that's what lasts in Vanaprastha. So that determines whether the husband and wife stay together in Vanaprastha Ashram or they prefer not staying together in Vanaprastha Ashram is if during their Grihastha life the cooperation in devotional service was the main focus, that they were assisting each other becoming Krishna conscious through the medium of using the Grihastha Ashram, they will find it very compatible to live together as Vanaprasthas, because then they can both easily switch their focus onto the spiritual activities and off of the economics and, you know, other activities like that. Those become secondary or, you know, much put in the background. But if they weren't able to cooperate on that platform, they didn't really serve together, then at Vanaprastha one won't find, at that time in life, one won't find the depth of relationship that's needed to carry one through together into Vanaprastha Ashram. One will find that the relationship was shallow. You know, it was just based on the external things. And so Vanaprastha not meaning that, one will find that separation will probably be better. Like that. You know, so that's an important aspect. Is how they saw the duties. Was it for themselves or was it for a higher purpose? Was it for improving? They both have material attachments, so assist each other in fulfilling those attachments. But that it's service. In other words, if it was based on service, it will last. If it's based on our own desires, it won't last. This is the trick. It means we want our, nowadays the modern talks about fulfilling the desires of the individual, but they can never fulfill them because they don't know the science. Man wants his desires filled, woman wants her desires filled. So then therefore man goes off and does what he wants, woman does what she wants. They're not together. Right? And when they are together, then they're arguing over about their individual rights. I mean, it's a nice way to have a conversation. You know, I mean, it's definitely, well, it creates interaction. But it's not the kind of interaction that either thought was what they were looking for in marriage. So they want the emotional exchange, but they want what they want. So in the modern scenario, it's impossible to get. Only in the Vedic you can get it. Because in the Vedic, then the husband, he sees 100%, gives up his own needs, and sees 100% of the needs of the wife. So her needs are completely taken care of. And the wife gives up her selfishness and gives all her attention to taking care of the needs of the husband. So his needs are taken care of 100%. So both have 100%. And because it's based on that mood of service, they also have the emotional exchange. So we see it's actually only possible through the religious process. Like that. It can't, it's not attainable in any other way. Like that. So that's the thing. Varnashram is to reestablish within the rebellious soul the mood of service. But because you won't do it immediately through just surrender to God, it's done through the medium of those things that are dear to him due to his conditioned nature. So grihastha life is dear to him, you know, family life, all these things. Therefore then he's taught how to serve in those capacities. And how to serve in connection with God, because it's God's direction. Then he progresses. So he makes spiritual advancement, and his material needs are dealt with. Okay. So it's a very simple science, but it's the depth of it is very broad. You know, every little aspect is dealt with. You know, like that. Like you don't find. You know, you could probably go to every Catholic or, you know, Christian denomination that there is on the planet and ask them what are the religious rules about using the toilet, and they won't have one. Right? But the Vedas do. So religion is so fine, it goes down into, you know, how to, you know, use the toilet, how to have sex, how to eat, how to, you know, every little bodily necessity is dealt with, even how to breathe, right? We just breathe, yes, but you want to digest something, you want the breath on the right, you know, like that. So depending upon different activities, then everything is, you're shown how everything with your body, how to engage it in God's service, like that. Though, unfortunately, due to the modern contemporary kind of environment is that rules and restrictions are considered to get in the way of fulfilling our desires. But actually the Vedic rules and regulations are there to fulfill your desires. So the more desires you have, then there's a body of rules for those. That's the system. Therefore, sometimes it's saying, why is it there's so many rules in grihastha life? Because the grihastha has so many more things to deal with. So therefore, he needs more rules to teach him. Once you know the rules, they're habit. Then they're not in the way. You know, they don't serve as an obstacle for exchange of emotion and other things. In the beginning, they may be a little bit as you practice. But if there's the same mentality, same mood, then husband and wife have no problem because they're at the same level of development. And as they practice and become expert at it, they'll both be at the same level. So. For them it's good. Therefore, if you have someone who's more religious, someone who's less religious, it won't be a good match. Like that. Someone who's more clean, less, all these different things. Then it won't match because then their natural lifestyle will be different. And then those things will be points of contention when those shouldn't be. Right? Those shouldn't be. You know, like dogs don't have any problem if the other dog barked. It doesn't bother them. Never, you don't hear dogs complaining about other dogs barking. Because it's the way they do it. They bark for the same things, act the same things. You know, they're all the same. You know? Does that make some sense? Yeah. Anything else? Or yes?
If you're in an incompatible situation, how do you change that? Like you mentioned, one's clean, one's not clean,
then it has to be discussed because it's the first thing is the nature should be the same, and then there's the fine adjustments. So the ideal is the natures are seen to be the same. So you get a man and woman who have the same natures, and then there'll always be some fine differences. So then the simplicity of that is the woman adjusts to whatever the man's is. you know, because it's a fine point. It's within her field, so it won't, it's, you can do it this way, you can do it that way, so it doesn't matter. So you see that the natures are as closest. Then if she adjusts, then you have very good compatibility. But if not, then they have to, they won't be able to approach it so easily. It won't come emotionally. They have to do it intellectually. That's the thing. Like our process is, the mind is what we're trying to get to be Krishna conscious. That's the actual thing we're trying to catch, is the mind. But the mind is using the senses, and it's using the intelligence to get done what it wants for material life. And we want to change it to wanting to do spiritual activities and thinking of Krishna rather than material activities thinking of Maya. So we do that through the intelligence. And Buddha Yoga. Through intelligence, then we go through and logically just say, this is right and this is wrong, so we should do this. Because the mind's business is going, accepting and rejecting. Like sankalpa, vikalpa. It likes this, rejects that. So the intelligence basically does that for it, though it can't make the final decision. The mind has to make that. The intelligence will say, here's the variety. This is right according to this situation or this rules or this, you know, information. And then the mind, with practice, will start to choose that one, though it may still go back to this. It knows it's right, but it'll still go to the other one. So by practice and good association, then you start to accept what the intelligence says. Then by practice, then the mind sees that it's good, it works. And so then it accepts it on its own. So then the process has been done. So for temporarily, then the husband and wife would have to sit and go through it, just in a very logical, non-emotional way. If they can do it. If they can do it, great. If they can't, then it's going to be a problem. It means they have to see, okay, Krishna says we should be clean. And these are the standards of cleanliness. And so therefore, our house, if it's going to be an ashram, should have these same standards. So therefore, we should do like this. We can't do this. We can't do that. You know, we can't pick up the plate from the table and then after that touch the doorknob. We have to wash our hand, then touch the doorknob. You know, like this. And then the wife will say, yes, I agree with this cleanliness thing. So cleanliness, part of it is orderliness and tidiness and all this. Therefore, you can't leave your socks all over the house. You know, so then they go through all the different points. You know. And then by intellect you understand, okay. And then it's a matter of practicing and both of them being humble and tolerant. You know? And if they can do that long enough, then it'll come. But if they can open that kind of channel of communication, then they can do it. You know? So, and it's important that should ideally be one of the things to see a compatibility in marriage in the contemporary situation, because you don't know the family backgrounds, you don't have the family involved in making arrangements for the marriage. So all that hasn't been checked before marriage, you know, generally. Most cases you don't really know the person you're dealing with. Like that. Well, previously the boy and girl won't know who they're dealing with, but the families do. You know, the boy's family and the girl's family, they check each other. They go to each other's house, they talk, you know, they just have, you know, pleasant conversations, they look around, and just by that they can tell everything. What's the tidiness and cleanliness of the house? You know, in the kitchen, and the women are going there and picking up the spoons and looking in the back, you know, in that little corner there. If there's some dirt there, then forget it. You know, they're going and they're seeing all these things. They're discussing all these different things and seeing all these little points. You know, at some point they have to use the bathroom. Then in the bathroom, they'll see how they keep that. You know, how do they dress? How do they sit? You know, it's one thing in public, but how do the women sit in private? How do the men deal with the women? How do the women deal with the men? How do the children in the family behave? Then you can see if the standards are the same or not. And if they're the same, then they know the boy and girl by nature will get along. Like that. Then it's just fine points. And so those things just, you know, the boy is sensitive to the girl's need, and the girl is satisfied with what the boy arranges and all that, and then it works. So, but we don't have that. So that communication needs to be established. Means these things should be discussed beforehand. We should see, you know, from the community. Those who have good marriages, you know, should basically list what things make it work. Those who had difficulty in marriages or being able to, whoever can understand or observe what have been the weaknesses. Even the most little things should be brought up. You know? Like that. And those things, and then it should be that everybody knows what's going on in this. And then what are the values? You know, those who are the authorities should discuss what are the values of the individuals. You know? Not necessarily in connection with this, just general. And it should be just seeing whatever it is. It shouldn't be, there should be, of course, there's certain standards, but other things are going to be general application. So it's better if the main discussions go on before the people know who they're getting matched up with. Because otherwise, I've even seen that the boys or girls will change what they say, because they know that the arrangement's being made with a particular person. And wanting to catch them, they will change what they say. Like if you have them fill out a form when they want to get married, or before, like that, they'll say one thing, but if they know who it is, they'll change it. Like that. And then after marriage, it's a problem, because it didn't change. I've seen that many times. You know, it's like the boy didn't want to have children, the girl very much wanted to have children, the boy said he'd want to so he could get married, and then after he says, I don't want children, or the opposite. You know, many things like that. You know, so they need to have open communication, because the boy and girl don't know each other from completely different cultural backgrounds, different situations, different values, different everything. You know, even nowadays, even in the same family, you know, means nowadays, you know, if you have a nuclear family, it's considered quite glorious, you know. You actually have, you know, a few people working together. Now you have, you know, what you call the electronic particle family, atomic particle family, you know. Each member is their own, you know, complete cultural entity that has nothing to do with the other members. You know, they just, you know, they kind of fly around the same place, but they don't have any interaction, right? You know, so then there needs to be this. And for those that can establish it, probably better than they get married. And ones that can't establish a open channel of communication, they'll have difficulty. You know, that would be, you know, does that make some sense? It's not that the emotions are ignored. It's just that you have to have some way to bridge the gap until you find the common denominators, so that then the emotions can be engaged. Because emotions can only be engaged on common platform. If there's not a common platform, they can't be engaged. So you have to use the intelligence to find that. Is that okay? So then. That's actually the latest. That's the third level. There's four levels. That's the third. Like that. The fourth is after puberty. So it's ideal if before she's gotten to there, the parents have already arranged marriage. Like that. They've already arranged. But of course, to do that, then you need very stable families, you know, traditions and everything like that. Because then you can, you know that you've made the arrangement today, and after, you know, so many years when they will actually live together, that they'll still have the same, they'll still be the same people. They won't change like that. Nowadays, it's very difficult, very difficult. The modern situation is girls, even though they have become women, they don't have the maturity of women because they're not trained. Like that means the women aren't training their daughters what is the nature, who they are. It means the girl doesn't know she's a woman. She doesn't know what her nature is, how to deal with it. So then when she hits puberty, she goes nuts. You know, she hasn't gained it from the family, so she looks to gain it somewhere else. So she goes out to her friends, and then we see that they spend very little time or interest in the family. But if the family is tight and they've given those values, in other words, if they don't transfer the values before the girl hits 12, they lose the girl. If they transfer those values before that, they maintain the girl. I mean, she stays, she feels supported. But if not, she goes out to her friends, doesn't do anything the parents do, get in trouble, get involved in all drugs and nonsense and sex. And who will she blame for it? the parents. Because the parents didn't train them or teach them, so therefore they got involved in all that. It may or may not be logical, but it's what happens. Like that. So it's very important that the values are given. So that means from a young age. Generally it's thought of, well, you know, girls are trained in chastity when they hit puberty. No, they're trained in chastity from when they're old enough to understand chastity means proper behavior. Chastity, one aspect is, you know, you're not off having sex with some other man than your husband. That's one aspect. In the West, that's considered, that is chastity. But in the Vedas, no, it's the mentality is chastity. Is the mood towards assisting here, assisting in the household duties, taking up the household duties as her duties within the ashram. Certainly, you know, and that way then having that, giving that support for the husband, being a well-wisher of the husband, like that. It's one thing that you take advantage of the facilities and cooperate, but to be a well-wisher, that's another step, like that. Then a further step than that is that not only do you have that mood of service and well-wishing towards the husband, but also any of his friends and relatives. That's even farther. And then the fourth one is to keep the same vows. So each one of those we see gets more and more deep, like that. So those four comprise chastity, and not following those compromise materials. Okay. So that is there. So all those four mentalities can be taught from when they're three, like that. Not, you can't teach that from 12. And if you've taught those, then staying with the same man automatically makes sense. It's just nature. Like that. So that's important. Because the point is a woman's protection, a woman being chaste is actually her own doing. Like that. It means you cannot, a woman who's not chaste, by most expert means, still they'll find a way to engage in adulterous activities. But if a woman herself protects herself, then there's fidelity in the relationships. That's there. So you can have the best arrangements to protect a woman unless she's the first one to protect, and then she's taking support from the men. It won't work. But if it's only the men are protecting and she's not, it won't work. So therefore, there's a lot to be done there. So that has to be trained from the young age. And same with boys. What is duty? What is the proper relationships? What is respect? All that has to be trained. Before the kids get to the age of going and to the teachers, they already have to know all this. It's not that when they get to the teachers that they're animals and then the teachers have to somehow or another straighten them out. They already have to be humans when they go to the school. That's where it starts. Human life begins. They can be an animal up to when they go to school, but when they go to school, they have to be a human. So the parents have to teach. If the same parents that the wife is something for sense gratification, the kids are also for sense gratification. Therefore, they are unable to train the kids because they themselves are untrained. If the wife is sense gratification, means one has no self-control, one has no respect. To consider a woman simply as for the senses means there's no respect for either womanhood or that individual woman. So then how you'll imbibe respect in the child? Right? So you can't give respect, they don't have self-control, they don't know how to assist or serve. If the wife doesn't serve, the husband is not taking care of the wife, the child won't learn that service mood. So then in that way, it won't. So many of these rules we find don't deal just with the husband and wife. They deal with the next generation. If the wife is not submissive to the husband, the child will not be submissive to anybody. It's just because the first guru is the mother. And if your first guru isn't submissive, that's where you gain your first impressions. Your deep religious impressions are gained from the mother. So if the mother is irreligious, the child will be irreligious. Like this. And these start from the womb. These don't start after they're born. these start from the womb. The child is already conscious of what they can hear and they can experience if the mother and father fight. So even there in the womb, they know what's going on. It disturbs them. Ayurveda talks about that. If it's really severe, it disturbs them so much they can get a hole, that disease called hole in the heart. They're born with a hole in the heart. That comes from when the mother and father fight when the child's in the womb. Like that. So it starts from then. So that means if you want to say you want to be practiced then, that means it had to have started before that. So if the husband and wife don't have a good relationship, having a child's not going to improve it. You know, sometimes it's thought like that. You know, husband and wife having bad relationships, so have a child that'll bring them together. Or the community is not inspired, so install some deities that'll bring it up. It's, all these ideas are there that you already have to have the relationship. Then having a child is the natural expression of that relationship. Husband and wife have a very deep, intimate mood, so that's then expanded upon by sharing those moments that then create the child. And they're creating a child, so therefore they have the same idea of what that child will be. Like that. So they both want the same child. It's not just they want sex, they want a child. Like that. And so the child should have these qualities. Then understanding that, then they have intimate relationship that produces the child. So we see it starts way before. So it's a great responsibility. The Grihastha Ashram is a very big responsibility. It's not necessarily understood. Therefore we find irresponsible Grihasthas. Both men, women, you know, like this. So it's a very big science. Like that. So these are the principles that are learned by a brahmachari. These are the little dinky ones, little details on, you know, okay, you know, you say this to the wife or you get that to the wife. That you learn from other grihasthas when one is basically at that point of, you know, going to get married or engagement. But as a brahmachari, one doesn't need to learn those. Knowing the nature, it doesn't mean that. It means the philosophy behind it, the actual religious principles behind it. Those are all learned before in the brahmachari ashram. And then by learning that, then one, the upakarvana, will feel comfortable. Now I feel comfortable to enter into grihastha life. I know what to do, you know. And they have the intelligence to be able to decipher that other people's experience, whether it's proper or not, like that. And the nice speaker, he hears all that, and, you know, it's very nice, but I personally wouldn't want to get involved. Like that. And so then they remain out of it. Like that. So that's how the same training will produce both. Sometimes it's thought grihastha training is a whole separate thing, and it's not necessary. It's the same thing. The funny thing is in Mayapur I ran some classes on brahmachari life, and 2/3 of the attendees were women. You know, first day it was mostly men and a few women, but somehow or another they came. Because then they were, you know, they would comment that then they learned who they were. As women, they learned their own nature. And that. And so then like that, it was. So the same training is good for everybody. Like that, but one has to go deep enough into it. The philosophy has to reach the point of the culture. Then you can apply it. If not, it just remains theory. Like here, we read through this so many times. You know, and Bhagavatam is just philosophy, right? And then reality is something else. But no, Bhagavatam is teaching us the reality of being a devotee. How to live in this material world as a devotee. So here it's teaching. Here's the whole process. There's here and also in the whole thing This whole thing of the whole process of marriage. What is an upakurvana brahmachari? He's gone off, he's austere, his qualities, everything like that. His desiring to get married for the purpose of removing those material attachments that keep him from going back to Godhead. So therefore he was a first class brahmachari. Seeing that, then Manu understands he'll make a first class grihastha. So then, hearing these qualities, then the girl, having been trained also, she understands this will make a first-class husband. And the mother, she is also satisfied. So therefore, the father, the mother, the daughter, they think it's a good idea. Kardama, he has the qualities. He come. The father explains the qualities of the daughter. He's satisfied. And so the whole thing we show here. Then how they'll live together, how... But he's a sage, she's a princess. So then... But she adjusts to his lifestyle. She follows his vow. Therefore, even though she's used to, you know, people spending the day grinding things, you know, cosmetics for her and taking care of her hair and bathing her, dressing her, and all facilities are there, so many servants. Then, because he's a simple, poor Brahmin, you know, he's sitting there alone under a tree somewhere, then therefore she just serves. Even though she's been served her whole life, she just serves. Seeing this, that she is actually chaste, then Kardama decides to have children. Right? Because the son is going to take on the qualities of the mother. So if the mother's unchaste, the child will be useless. So first he sees she's chaste. Then seeing that, then he creates, because he has the ability, he creates all the facilities she needs. Therefore a flying palace that can move around the universe. Like that, because she's a princess. If she was a Brahmin girl, he wouldn't bother doing that. Like that. But he has the power, so he creates that for her. So he's in with his ability, he does it. It's not an over-endeavor for him. So he creates what she needs. Like this. And so then she's satisfied because he's done his duty, and he's satisfied because she's doing her duty. So each have, you know, committed themselves to the other. And so you can see here, this is like the details of perfect household life are explained in this story. And then, when the son is old enough, then he goes back to the forest. Like that. Because that was his condition in the beginning to get married. Like that. Was that when you know, the time comes, then he's going back to the forest. Because his purpose of grihastha life was to finish off those material desires. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Some sense? Anything else? Or what, you had something? Or it was... Gruntaraj Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Srila Prabhupada ki, Samabeta Bhaktivedanta ki, Jainatai Gaurav Sainarang.